The book of Lamentations, right between Jeremiah and Ezekiel, the book of Lamentations. Help me get there. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations. All right, we made it. The book of Lamentations, it's only 5 chapters long. And it reminds me much of the Song of Solomon. The subject matter is different, but it's just got the same kind of poetic feel to it. The Lamentations of Jeremiah. The word Lamentations, of course, means mourning. Like not evening and mourning, but mourning. Mourning, weeping, sorrow. The Lamentations of Jeremiah were written by Jeremiah after the fall of Jerusalem. The fall of Jerusalem. Those words can roll off our tongues so simply and so easily. But the weight of that statement to the Old Testament Jew is complete devastation. We'll talk about that here in just a moment. Of the 5 chapters of Lamentations, this is interesting, 4 of them are exactly 22 verses long. And the one chapter in the middle that's not 22 verses is 66 verses, which is 22 times 3. So there's a symmetry to the book of Lamentations. I will tell you this, and I did not type this out for reasons I will make clear. The scholars tell us that there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. And that as Jeremiah wrote Lamentations, chapters 1, 2, and 3, every one of the verses started with a different letter of the Hebrew alphabet. In other words, if we were doing our alphabet, it would be A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and each verse started with verse 1A, verse 2B, verse 6. So the 22 verses of chapter 1, 2, and 4 start with those 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. Chapter 5 does not follow that, but chapter 3, they say, does the same thing, only it does it 3 times over, because there are 66 verses, 3 times 22. Now that's interesting information, but that's also in the category of, so what? Alright, we don't speak Hebrew, so that doesn't mean a whole lot to us. And here's one of the things, call me a cautious skeptic. And that is that somebody can say something that I can't verify, and if I can't verify it, I don't know if it's true. Now, I can't verify it, number one, because I don't speak Hebrew. Number two, because I have no source to go back and see if that's true. And so I'm left to quoting someone that said that someone else repeated, and a lot of the fellows I read that from don't know that for a fact either. They're believing the guy that, it sounds like an awful lot like Facebook to me. Where people are just repeating something somebody else said without verifying that it's correct information, and that's a dangerous way to go. Now, I'm not saying that's not true, but I'm saying the only reason I didn't put that in there is because I can't verify that myself. I'm not smart enough in Hebrew to do that, and so I just left it out. But it is interesting to me that 4 of the chapters have 22 verses. Now, the thing that gets me, too, is that chapter 5, they say, the scholars say, don't follow that system, and yet it ended up with 22 verses. Now, if you understand, if you know the history of our Bible, when the Old Testament was written, there were no chapters and verses in any of the books. So the fact that chapter 5 ended up with the same number of chapters of 1, 2, and 3 without the alphabetical thing means more to me than the alphabetical thing does. It shows me the hand of God in its origin, in its organization. So each chapter is a separate, and here's our first blank, dirge, and that's a strange word, D-I-R-G-E. D-I-R-G-E, a dirge. What is a dirge? Well, we talk about a funeral dirge. It is a slow mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, slow mourning song of remorse. A funeral dirge. And each of these 5 chapters is a separate dirge bemoaning the results of Jerusalem's rejection of God, and God's judgment upon Jerusalem. So each of the five chapters, the scholars again say that each five of those is a separate poem or a separate song. It's said that the Jews sang this on the ninth day of the fourth month of the year as they went into the temple, the day that commemorates the destruction of Babylon, and they sing the Book of Lamentations every year at that time. Here's why. Notice this second paragraph, and I'm going to read this paragraph. Try to read it slowly and thoughtfully, and as I typed it out and tried to word it the way that I thought would be powerful, just try to think as an Old Testament Jew about what we're reading. Jerusalem is now a ruined city. The smell of death is everywhere. The rubble and ruins of the city lie all around, and the smoke of her burning buildings was still in the air. The cries of the remnant and the sobs of the bereaved could be heard everywhere. The walls and the gates of the once proud city lay in heaps. The temple of Solomon and all of its splendor had been destroyed, and its treasures had been taken to Babylon to be placed in the temple of their false gods. The altars had been desecrated, and the royal line of David had been marched off to Babylon. The survivors were chained and led off into exile, and the city was now in the hands of the Gentiles. I don't think there's any city to you and I as an American that is considered with the thought that Jews had for Jerusalem. Washington, D.C. is our capital, but it's just a capital. It doesn't have a heritage like Jerusalem. It doesn't have a religious meaning to us or a worship of God connected to it, so to speak. There's nothing in our vocabulary, really, or our understanding that compares to Jerusalem. Our hometown probably is the closest thing that comes to it. I was talking with Anita and Cheryl yesterday, and they were reminiscing on Byesville 50 years ago. That's not that long ago. 50 years is not that long ago. You understand that? And they were telling me what Byesville was like 50 years ago, full of energy and it was a crowded place and factories, and they were naming the different factories that employed people. They were telling me about the supermarket and the stores and all the businesses that were all over Byesville. And having only been here since 1991, I can't imagine those things envision. And they kind of bemoan the fact that it's not what it used to be. And that's kind of a disheartening thing. One story Cheryl was telling me is that their dad was a postman here in Byesville. And she said at Christmas time, you couldn't do this now, but at Christmas time, he would bring all the mail home and have the kids help him sort the mail so that he could take it out and deliver it. Now, you can't get away with things like that these days. But just that homespun, that closeness of community, she said that Cheryl was telling me there was a Hungarian section here in town, and they loved that section because their dad would get all kinds of cookies and cakes and all that stuff at Christmas time that those kind of people would give to him for that. So the memories of a hometown are probably the closest thing, but it still doesn't have that religious connection to it and that presence of God. We don't have anything that we can understand the worth of Jerusalem to the Jew. So even when we read that paragraph, we can try to visualize it, try to think of what it was like, but we really can't get there. Look, if you would, at Lamentations. Look at chapter 5. Here's the biblical account. If you put that together with that paragraph that we've tried to illustrate it with, notice chapter 5 and verse 1. Jeremiah says, "Remember, O Lord, what has come upon us. Consider and behold our reproach. Our inheritance," speaking of Jerusalem, "is turned to strangers, our houses to aliens." The Gentiles had overrun them, and those Gentile dogs were now living in their very houses. Verse 3, "We are orphans and fatherless. Our mothers are as widows." The Babylonians came in and just slew people right and left. "We have drunken our water for money. Our wood is sold unto us. Our necks are under persecution. We labor and have no rest. We have given the hand to the Egyptians and to the Assyrians to be satisfied with bread. Our fathers have sinned and are not, and we have borne their iniquities. Servants have ruled over us. There is none that doth deliver us out of their hand. We get our bread with the peril of our lives. because of the sword of the wilderness. Our skin was black like an oven because of the terrible famine. They ravished the women in Zion and the maids in the cities of Judah. When heathen nations overrun other nations, there is no morality. Princes are hanged up by their hand. The faces of elders were not honored. They took the young men to grind, and the children fell under the wood. The elders have ceased from the gate, and the young men from their music. The joy of our heart is ceased. Our dance is turned into mourning. The crown is fallen from our head. Woe unto us that we have sinned. For this our heart is faint. For these things our eyes are dim. The devastation of the city of Jerusalem is what caused Jeremiah to write these five chapters. And as he did, his heart was broken. Jeremiah had seen it coming, our third paragraph there. Jeremiah had seen this coming and had warned them all throughout the book of Jeremiah. You remember our study of it. He told them the Babylonians were coming in. They were going to conquer them. If they would surrender, everything would be fine. There'd be no death and destruction. But the people treated him like a traitor for giving such a message and threw him in the stocks and threw him down into a pit to suffer. And yet it came to pass. And though he had fulfilled his role in faithfully proclaiming the word of God, he had no satisfaction in Jeremiah's demise. There was no "I told you so" feeling in Jeremiah. He was, and here's the blank there, he was a broken-hearted prophet. He was a broken-hearted prophet. It's interesting to note, Jonah preached to the Ninevites, and they heeded his message, and he got upset. Jeremiah preached to Jerusalem, and they didn't heed his message, and he didn't get upset. He was brokenhearted with them. He felt the agony and the pain of his own people. His pain, agony, remorse, mourning, and pity can all be heard as we read the book of Lamentations. When you read it slowly. Read it with the vision in mind of what Jeremiah is looking at when he writes about it. He has been called the weeping prophet, and it's no wonder that some mistook him for Jesus. Remember, Jesus said to his disciples in Matthew 16, "Whom do men say that I am?" Some said, "Thou art Elias," or "John the Baptist." And some, "Jeremiah." Well, why did they think that Jesus was Jeremiah? Well, they knew Jesus' broken heart for Jerusalem. "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that stonest the prophets, how oft would I have gathered thee of the hen of their chicks, and you would not." Jesus sat on the hillside overlooking Jerusalem, bemoaning, mourning, lamenting their rejection. And so did Jeremiah. One interesting, and I would say overlooked, because I didn't find this in any of the books I was reading as I was researching and reading and gathering, something that stood out to me, and I thought, well, there's something to focus on, and it looks pretty daunting right there, so we'll not spend a lot of time on it. But the book of Lamentations, can I call it this? It's a book of pronouns. It is a book of personal pronouns. There have got to be more personal pronouns in Lamentations per capita than there is in any other book in the Bible, because it is just chock full. That's what it's all about. And those pronouns are in reference to three particular entities or subjects. And that is, and they all start with J, Jerusalem, Jeremiah, and Jehovah. Those three entities are talked about throughout the book of Lamentations and no other. And the great thing in reading this book, and this is where it's likened to the Song of Solomon, is when you're reading it, recognizing who is speaking when you're reading it. Notice when you start in verse number 1. "How doth the city sit solitary that was full of people? How is she become as a widow? She that was great among the nations and princes among the provinces, how is she become tributary?" Verse 2, "She weepeth sore on the night, Her tears are on her cheeks. Among all her lovers, she hath none to comfort her. All her friends have dealt treacherously with her. They are become her enemies. We don't have time to read through all these verses, but you'll notice there the subject of chapter 1 is Jerusalem. When you say, who is she? Who is her? It's Jerusalem. Jeremiah is sitting there looking at the city and using those pronouns, she and her, and I won't do this at all, but he uses in those 11 verses, he uses the word she 15 times, and the word her 35 times in those 11 verses. You notice we don't have any key words in this tonight because these are basically the key words, and I'm not going to give you all of them every time, but I would just challenge you to use that little chart when you're reading through Lamentations and notice that in each section there is a focus on those particular pronouns. And in those first 11 verses, it's all about she and her. Verse 7, Jerusalem remembered in the days of her affliction and of her miseries, all her pleasant things that she had in the days of old when her people fell into the hand of the enemy, and none did help her. The adversary saw her and did mock at her Sabbaths. You see that theme going through these first 11 verses. It's a theme of Jerusalem being she and being her. But then in verse number 12, there's a change. And it goes from that second person to the first person. Verse 12 says, is it nothing to you, all ye that pass by? Behold and see if there be any sorrow like unto my sorrow. It's no longer he and she. Now it's my, me, and I. But it's still talking about Jerusalem. And that's why it's important to ascertain, because you say, well, that's Jeremiah talking now. Well, that won't fit into the passage. From above he hath sent fire into my bones, and it prevailed against them. He hath spread a net for my feet. He hath turned me back. You could apply that to Jeremiah, but continue on. Verse 14, the yoke of my transgression is bound in his hand. They are wreathed and come upon my neck. He hath made me to fall, and the Lord hath delivered me into their hands, from whom I am not able to rise up. The Lord hath trodden underfoot all my mighty men in the midst of me. Jeremiah didn't have any mighty men. That I, my, and me is still the city of Jerusalem speaking. Again, it is ancient poetry. It is a dirge as Jerusalem is looking at her demise and her destruction. Verse 17, Zion spreadeth forth her hands, and there is none to comfort her. The Lord hath commanded concerning Jacob from his head, the Lord is righteous, for I have rebelled. So chapter 1 is all about Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the subject. Chapter 2, you can notice there that the subject moves around. In the first 10 verses, it's he and her. He and her. I think I type it in the word his on that for you too? I wrote it on mine. The word his should be on that line also. That's used 16 times in that section. The words he, his, and her. We're familiar with his and her. His is Jehovah. Her is Jerusalem. And it's all about their relationship in the first 10 verses. Then it's about Jeremiah in verses 11 to 14. And the key words are my, mine, and I. Then it speaks again of Jerusalem in verses 13 to 16. Thee, thine, and thy. Then Jehovah in verses 17 to 19. He and him. Again, we'll not go through all that, but I think this would be very helpful to use when you're reading through the book of Jeremiah to see these particular sections. Now, some of them spill over. There's a her in the I section, and there's sometimes an I in the she section, but the majority of those pronouns are in each of those different categories, and you can see who is talking by the context of it. Chapter 3 is the long chapter with 66 verses. And it goes from Jeremiah in the first 21 verses, and that's all about the prophet. I am the man that has seen affliction, that by the rod of him, that he hath led me and brought me into darkness and unto light. Surely against me is his hand turned. So Jeremiah is the subject of those first 21 verses. Then Jehovah. These are not pronouns, but the two phrases, the Lord, L-O-R-D, all capitalized. And then the Lord with just an L capitalized is in there twice in that section. Then Jerusalem, then Jeremiah, then Jerusalem again in the closing verses. Chapter 4 is all about Jerusalem again. And it's in different sections, the first 16 verses, then verse 17 to 20, then verse 21 to 22. And I'm sure there's much more in that than what I have come across yet. There's a reason those different spots are using different pronouns for that place and that time. Nothing's accidental in the Bible. You don't come across it and say, oh, look at that. Look how those are categorized like that. I bet the Lord didn't know that. I think he knew the whole time, and there's something there. And as I said, as I read several different books and research and all that, nobody even talked about these pronouns this way. So there's something you can go discover for yourself, because there's got to be something there. Chapter 5 begins, those first 18 verses we read already, and describe Jerusalem and her destruction and devastation and all that happened. And then look at the last three verses, if you would, as it closes with Jehovah. Chapter 5 and verse 19, Thou, O Lord, remainest forever, Thy throne from generation to generation. Jerusalem is not forever. It was destroyed. But Thou, O Lord, remainest forever. Verse 20, Wherefore dost Thou forget us forever and forsake us for so long time? Turn Thou us unto Thee, O Lord, and we shall be turned, renew our days as of old. But Thou hast utterly rejected us. Thou art very wroth against us. Again, one of the scholars said that when they read these verses on the ninth day of the fourth month of the Jewish calendar, as they commemorate that, they read verse 22 before they read verse 21. They end with verse number 21 because they want to end on a positive note. They read, But Thou hast utterly rejected us, Thou art very wroth with us. Turn Thou us unto Thee, O Lord, and we shall be turned. Renew our days as of old. So these five chapters in the book of Lamentations, showing us the heart of Jeremiah, not rejoicing over the fall of, not saying, I told you it was going to happen, not saying my words came to pass, but brokenhearted and weeping over the destruction of Jerusalem. Notice then the overview at the bottom of the page, and I wanted to make this longer, but I ran out of space. The overview of Lamentations, there's some subpoints in there that I just didn't have the room to put in. Chapter 1 is the provocation against God. The provocation, provo, P-R-O-V-O. Or provocation. The provocation against God. Verses 1 to 11, we noticed in the pronouns are different from verse 12 to 22, and they kind of break that chapter in half. Verses 1 to 11 talk about Jeremiah's sorrow. Verse 12 to 22 talk about Jerusalem's sorrow. Again, verse 12, is it nothing to you that pass by? Behold and see if there be any sorrow like unto my sorrow. Jerusalem had provoked God, and God's judgment had fallen. Chapter 2 then, Roman numeral 2, is the punishment. The punishment from God. And that chapter again kind of breaks down almost in half in how he punished them and why he punished them. You might just write those words down. How he punished them. He hath cut off in his fierce anger all the horn of Israel, verse 3. Then why he punished them at the second half of the chapter. What thing shall I take, verse 13, to witness for thee? What thing shall I liken to thee, O daughter of Jerusalem? What shall I equal to thee that I may comfort thee, O virgin daughter of Zion? For thy breach is great like the sea. Who can heal thee? The punishment from God. Chapter number 3 is the prophet of God. And again, that's when Jeremiah gets very personal in talking about his call. I am the man that has seen the affliction. Again, the personal pronouns referring to himself, I and me. And that goes down to verse 22. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. Great is thy. Now you know why I came across that verse yesterday, and that song just kind of rang out in my head, and I stopped for a few minutes and just listened to the words of that song and sang along with it. Great is thy faith. In the midst of all the destruction that Jeremiah was beholding, he could say, thy mercies are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. They were not utterly consumed. The city had been destroyed. The gold of Solomon's temple had been taken to the idols of Babylon. The godly line of David had been dispersed and taken away. All the people had been, it looked pretty hopeless. But even in the midst of all that darkness, Jeremiah could see a silver lining. May that be a reminder to you and I that don't face near the devastation of Jerusalem. That when we think we're in such darkness, look for that silver lining. God, great is thy faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore will I hope in him. The Lord is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeketh him. It is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. So the prophet is giving his personal testimony in chapter 3. Number 4, the people of God. In chapter number 4, the people of God. And it mentions all those that were in Jerusalem. Verse 6, for the punishment of the iniquity of the daughter of my people. Verse 7, her Nazarites were purer than snow. They were whiter than milk. They were more ruddy in body than rubies. Their polishing was of sapphire. The kings of the earth, verse 12, and the inhabitants of the world would not have believed that the adversary and the enemy should have entered into the gates of Jerusalem. For the sins of her prophets and the iniquities of her priests, they have shed the blood of the just in the midst of her. So all the different folks, the people of Jerusalem. And then finally, chapter 5, the chapter that we've read and looked at, is the prayer to God. The prayer to God. Remember, O Lord, what has come upon us. Consider and behold our reproach. Our inheritance is turned to strangers, our houses to aliens. The prayer to God. Verse 1 to 18, the prayer that they would be remembered. The prayer that they would be remembered. Remember, O Lord, what has come upon us. Consider and behold our reproach. And then verse 19 to 22, the prayer that they would be restored. The prayer that they would be restored. Verse 19, thou, O Lord, remainest forever. Verse 21, turn thou us unto thee, O Lord, and we shall be turned. Renew our days as of old. The book of Lamentations. Small book put between Jeremiah and Ezekiel. One of the books that I usually read in preparation for these lessons didn't even cover the book of Lamentations. Went straight from Jeremiah to Ezekiel. Did I in there look and say, wait a minute, he forgot one. He forgot Lamentations. Easily don't be overlooked, but so powerful. The end result of Jeremiah's prophecy being fulfilled and the destruction of that city of Jerusalem. So that when we read in the New Testament about the Pharisees and the scribes and the Sadducees and their love for Jerusalem, we understand that Old Testament concept, that Old Testament love for that place. And when they rebuilt the we read in the New Testament, when they rebuilt the place of, not the new, the old, when they rebuilt the Temple of Solomon, and those that had seen the original temple, it couldn't compare to its glory and splendor. And all of it was just a reminder of what they once had that they sacrificed because of their sin that could never be replaced and never be duplicated. Jeremiah is writing about that as he writes in the book of Lamentations. Let's stand together tonight with our heads bowed and our eyes closed. Thank you, Lord, for this book. Lord, what a heart-rending book it was, especially for Jeremiah and for the Jews that saw that period of time and that devastation and got it again. It is hard for us to imagine what that would be like. And Lord, thank you for Jeremiah's heart and his faithfulness to you and the instruction that the book gives us that, Father, even in the darkest of days, great is thy faithfulness. Thank you for that promise. In Jesus' name, amen. Do we have a page tonight, Brother Matthews?
We have number 9.